Adversity? Bring it. The struggle? I welcome it. Snooze on life? Never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on.
Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 160. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three, Diamandia, the boss, Lingos. We have Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela, and I am Dave, the body, Regina. I told you my nicknames were gonna be a thing to start. I gave it to myself.
Oh wow! Yeah, even better.
So guys, we're extremely grateful for Diamandia joining us today. She's traveling over 2 hours away to come be with the No Snooze audience. So we thank you. But to introduce her quickly, she is an international TEDx speaker, a real estate investor, a mentor, and a former VP for the UFC. She's the founder of Diamandia and a prevalent entrepreneur. She is a results-driven visionary and branding leader with over two decades. I thought you were only 22, so now I'm confused. Of experience guiding numerous organizations in their creative initiatives, generating millions of dollars in revenue. Her ability to quickly assess situations and create effective solutions is highly sought after, regardless of the level of adversity. Her company, Diamandia, encompasses all things wellness, luxury, motivation, and alignment. She has built a brand that teaches women to overcome their hardships and build a life of intention. How does that sound when I read that to you?
Really uncomfortable.
And can you get somebody to write me one, please?
Yeah.
Yeah? So thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And we have to... This has been like a thing for Sean. I mean, he's brought us the past like three guests that we've introduced. So, you know, that connection through Sean Degnan, once again, we have to
shout to
acknowledge.
Out to Sean.
Absolutely.
Amazing dude.
Where did this all begin?
Oh, my God.
I mean, like, take us back because, you know, now after reading that, you've done a lot. But how do you go from a young Diamandia to on a TEDx stage? That's literally the biggest speaking platform that you can be a part of, right? So, like, take us back. Where are you from? How did it all get started?
I grew up in the Bronx and Connecticut, Madison, Clinton area. I went to college. I started my college situation at URI. I didn't graduate from there. I didn't really know what I was trying to do. Like, I didn't have a clear vision. Very different. Right. I didn't know. I like kind of knew that I wanted to make money and like not have financial problems, but I didn't really know what that was. I thought I was going to be a doctor. And then I went to the biggest party school and I didn't learn how to be a doctor. I learned how to make a bong hit, essentially.
I learned how to end up in the doctor's office.
Yeah. So I was kind of figuring it out, you know, and really unclear about what I wanted or like what I was good at. I ended up working in the restaurant business and like bartending. And I ended up in Boston for grad school eventually and going to art school. And I still didn't know what I was doing. And I ended up like bartending for this group and their marketing person had quit and they needed someone to like sit in an office and answer phones. So I could go to grad school, answer phones as a marketing person and also bartend in the venue. And as I was doing that, I ended up just, you know, I was getting my master's in fine arts for graphic design. And so they needed a graphic designer for, you know, a couple of other venues that were at Fenway. And then I was working as a bartender in a couple of other venues. And I was a marketing person in one venue. And I ended up in this ethos of this major restaurant group in Boston, and they were growing significantly and they couldn't keep themselves out of their own way. And this was like the beginning of Barstool Sports. Like David Portnoy just started and he was like selling, you know, he was like events driven at Game On. And this was like this time, mm-hmm. like we hadn't reversed the curse yet, essentially. So I was in the middle of that, and they were growing, and their, you know, their venues were multiplying. They were going national. And so as they were growing, I was growing in my career with them. And I ended up moving my way all the way up through the company, becoming a VP of creative services for them, running their marketing department. And it was just because I didn't know really what I was doing, but I saw opportunity within the company and I saw growth. And I got my, you know, I eventually did get my master's in fine arts, and then I went back to school and got a bachelor's in business. And I didn't know why I was doing that either, but I was kind of just like putting the pieces together, and I was really just seeing opportunity and standing in it. And I worked for them for 13 years. I ended up taking a break from them, leaving that career, and I took a year off. And I didn't really plan on it. It was just something that I was like super burnt out. I was going like 150 miles an hour, and I had to like stop. And I ended up moving to Manhattan and not working and just kind of like figuring out what I was doing. I ended up seeing somebody, and he was from Las Vegas, and we had moved to New York for about a year, and he got a job offer in Vegas. I had never been to Las Vegas. Like,
yeah, this is ironic. You're taking a year off in an extremely busy city in New York.
Yeah.
And then you go to an even more busy.
That I have never been to.
Right. So you've never been to Vegas at this time.
Blind.
Gotcha. Okay.
And he was like, you know, want to move to Vegas. And I was like, fuck it.
Sure. I'm off.
When am I not, like, when am I going to not do this? Yeah. You know, when is this opportunity going to come again, essentially? Yeah. So I moved to Vegas, didn't have a job, didn't know what I was doing. And I was out there for like 9 months. The relationship fell apart because you don't move to Vegas with a boyfriend, FYI, everyone. And I happened to apply for a bunch of jobs, and I didn't really know about the UFC that much. And he really was like, you should apply here. It's like a great match. I was super into fitness. I was doing a lot of MMA training at the time. I was working out like a psychopath, and like it just like it was a match, right? Mm-hmm. I interviewed with them, and I knew immediately I got the job. Like internally, I knew, and I started working for them. Like, and then my relationship fell apart, and I found myself in Las Vegas working for the UFC. And like looking myself in the mirror, and the breakup was really hard, and I really had to figure out what the fuck I was doing. Can I swear on this?
I mean, my child listens, but yeah, sure. Go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. You're good.
I had to really figure out what the fuck I was doing. Like, I was sitting in this position. I was in Vegas. That company was like right about to like blow up. We are the 20-year anniversary of the company.
Of the UFC.
Of the UFC. And I remember we had this town hall meeting, which a town hall meeting is like a company, yep. You know, the company meeting. So the Fertittas owned the company at the time. And
what year is this?
2014, 15-ish,
gotcha, okay.
Right around there.
Yep, yep.
And I was like, what am I doing here? Like, why? Like, I can just go home. I don't have to do this. Like, I don't have any friends here. I'm heartbroken. Like, what was actually happening? And we had the town hall meeting, and we went in and we watched the ESPN 20-year documentary. And it was the entire story of how the UFC like almost didn't make it. And they had this one reality show, and it was on Spike TV. And it was the final of that reality show. It was the fight between Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin. And that show.
This is the Ultimate Fighter you're talking about?
The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, yeah.
That last episode went crazy. And that episode saved the company. Like, they were going to dial it in. And that happened. And I watched the story. And I was sitting in that auditorium at Red Rock. And I was like, I am exactly where I need to be right now. You are not going anywhere.
Yep.
You are going to take this opportunity, and you are going to make everything out of this job. And I just became the job. I like did not do anything but work out and live, eat, breathe, sleep UFC. UFC gym, UFC fit. That's all I did. And I was like a psychopath dialed into my career and like what I was going to accomplish with this opportunity. Mm. And I did. I just went right after it. And then I ran right into a brick wall, essentially.
it's ironic though when you're speaking. I'm thinking because it seems like it's such a good opportunity. This whole, things are aligning. I mean, you have this phenomenal work ethic. You're extremely fit. You also love that healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So you're in now a company where you're taking the event experience from the last job. Like everything is in alignment. Yeah. So then you say it was odd for me to hear that you almost left that. And then it took that moment where you're watching that documentary, you realize, okay, no, I'm here. So now you're all in at that time.
Because I was afraid.
What are you afraid of?
The unknown. Like I didn't know what I was doing in Vegas in the first place. And I didn't have the security of my relationship. And I didn't have the protection of like a friend group. I was like alone. And the unknown was so great. And I couldn't control that. And I was scared shitless, you know, and I was like, what am I going to do in the desert?
Right. Well, so that's my question now, right? I've been to Vegas a couple times for some events, we'll call them, mm-hmm. bachelor parties and birthdays. I mean, I don't think I'd be able to live in Vegas. So what was it like living in Vegas at that time? Like, do you have to be strategic? Because you're so into the health and wellness game, but there's not that many health and wellness activities that are really going on beyond.
Well, there is.
I'm sure, but I'm saying, you know, when people think of Vegas, they're not like, oh, I'm going to go get holistic and healthy in Las Vegas. So that has to be very intentional.
You have to really think about what your priorities are. And like, you know, I had moved to a place everyone came to. Mm-hmm. So everyone, people that I didn't even know or like acquaintances, right? I became better friends with them when I moved to Vegas because they would come out there and they would see me. And then I moved back here and I never see them. I saw them more when I lived in Vegas.
Yep.
They live down the street from me now. But like, you have to be really clear about what your priorities are. My priority was my career and that job. And like, I had to say no. And I had to be able to like, listen, you're on vacation and I'm not on vacation and I'm not going out till 6 o'clock in the morning with you. Like, I have to be in the office at 7. Like, this is not... I'm not doing the same thing you are. I'll meet you at 2 or 3 o'clock by the pool and then I have to be back. Like, you have to be really, really clear on what your goals are and like not like fall out of that. And you do fall out of them, but you have to get right back on and realize like you're not on vacation. That was my life. Yeah. You know,
where did this this work ethic come from? Was it derived from family values? Was it you just, you know, saying to yourself, wow, this is something that I know I'm supposed to do. I'm going to do it. Were you an athlete growing up?
No. You
know, yeah. So for those of you guys who don't know, how tall are you?
5'9".
Yeah. So that, I mean, I claim 6'2", but you appear as a taller woman. So I immediately thought, oh, maybe she's an athlete growing up. And then me being an athlete, you associate like hard work with athletics coming up. So I'm always interested in hearing how the work ethic came about.
I'm Greek. You know, I grew up, my dad worked like 14-hour days, you know, so that was ingrained in me. And that was the only thing that was important. And so that's how I was taught. And I really came from the fact that I was told that I couldn't. Mm. And this work ethic is proving that wrong.
Who told you specifically?
My father.
Right. Really?
Absolutely. Really? So like, I was not athletic growing up. I was the opposite of that. I did play sports. I played volleyball and basketball. I was terrible. You know, I got better my junior, senior year.
What,
but
were you
like
goofy? Like what? Talk to
I
me.
Was
what
just
was
like
terrible?
A fat little Greek girl.
Fat little Greek girl?
Yeah. Like really? I didn't learn how to play sports growing up. Mm-hmm. That culture wasn't ingrained. So when I got to high school, like I didn't know how to dribble a basketball, let alone be good at it. Right?
Yes. Yeah,
like there was no like education on like exercising in my family. Mm-hmm. Right? It was like eat and be quiet, essentially. So like that fire that I had came from somebody telling me that I couldn't. And it took me till I was like 40 years old to figure that out and then work on that. But this was to prove everybody wrong. Like, don't, like the best thing, if you want me to do something, tell me I can't do it.
Right.
I will prove you wrong. I will make sure that I like smear it in your face. Like that has been my whole life, is proving that wrong.
Yeah, is that motivator?
Like my dad told me that I wasn't going to college. I have 4 college degrees. And I went to Yale.
That's pretty funny.
Like, Literally.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it until like I ended up going to Peru and doing some work on myself and like, wow. Wow. Yeah. This is all your daddy issues.
Well, so now how do you, where you are now, how do you get away from that? Even in any relationship, even in a friendship, whether it's an intimate relationship or, you know, a business relationship, how do you, because I'm that way too, but it seems like you're even more about it. I tend to, I guess, maybe put myself first in that situation a little bit more than using others as the fuel. How do you balance that?
Well, I realize now I'm aware of it.
Right.
Right. And so it's a different game.
Okay.
Like before, I didn't even know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I was just searching for love, essentially, from my parents. Right. So once that became very clear to me, that's when the work started. And so that self-awareness and then creating space for yourself before you react to certain situations or create a strategy in a certain situation. Like right now, I meditate more than I work out, which my whole life I've worked out 3 hours a day, an hour and a half of cardio, like probably an hour and a half a hit, like minimal. That has been my whole workout, like ethic. Mm. Now I work out 15 to 20 minutes a day. I don't do cardio. There's nothing explosive about what I do. And I meditate an hour and a half. So at least. So I'm an hour and a half sitting still with myself every single morning, becoming very clear internally before I even start my day. And I was like, I can't believe I actually fucking talk about this because I thought meditation was a crock of shit.
I can't sit still for 3 minutes.
Right. I would like, let's go like spar. Like I'll go hit something. Like let's go run 12 miles. Like that was me. The fact that I meditate for an hour and a half is insanity to
so
talk
you just
about.
Sit there, you just sit there and you're quiet in your own thoughts.
Well, I wouldn't say quiet, but
I scream.
It's a guided right now. And so there's no, you're just present with yourself and what your energetic output is internally already. And so it quiets a lot of response to things. It quiets a lot of reaction to things. And like, there used to be no space with me between something or someone, some stimulus and my response. It would be immediate, right? Because that's what good athletes are doing. They're reacting before you even present the move. I've already thought about every single move that I can make before you even do yours, right? I've strategized this.
Yep.
Like the risk is zero and I'm three steps ahead of whatever you're thinking, right? But now there's so much space like between what is done or what the stimulus is to like what my response is. And sometimes I don't react to something for like a week. Because I need to get really clear on what it is I'm looking to do and why.
I should apply that because even in business, you know, I become a keyboard warrior when someone says something. But now what I do is I draft that email and I don't send it.
Yes.
I let it sit. Then even 24 hours later, I'm like, whoa there, bud.
Yeah.
Relax. Do not send that email. You know what I mean? Relax. Let's dial it down about 8 to 10 notches. No, so I really respect that. And I bet you ironically, I'm equating this to something that I'm trying to get better in my life, which is literally stretching, like the elasticity, the plasticity of my body, right? Because I'm noticing that I'm very tight. And it could be because I'm sitting down for a large portion of the day. Again, still very active in the morning and I get my routine in. But I've noticed that just me implementing some time at the end to just start stretching, it's work that I never would have done before. And the results are probably going to be more beneficial just from that as if I was not doing that, right? Like all my gains will probably be even better because I'm actually stretching out my muscles. So you're stretching your mind in terms of the meditation. That's, that was kind of what I thought about.
And my body has completely changed because of meditation. Like completely changed. Which I still can't believe I'm talking
about
this.
Well, to be in that relaxed state is incredible. I mean, even for fighters in the UFC, right? Like the fighters that are more laid back and have the ability to control and relax their body, they're able to take a hit, right? Whereas the tense fighters, you get injured faster. So it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
We wanted to take a quick second to let you guys know that we partnered with our good friends over at Orgain.com. We're happy to offer our listeners 30% off by entering the code NOSNOOZE30. Again, that's NoSnooze30 for 30% off your first order. If you're on the market for a new protein powder, nutritional shake, protein bar, or Mike's favorite, collagen peptides, Orgain is your one-stop shop. As all of you know, my Crohn's disease is currently in remission, and the only protein I use is from Orgain. My personal favorites are the chocolate peanut butter and the vanilla bean. With the code, you can try a 2-pound tub for under $20. Talk about not snoozing. Go get yours today. Now, back to the epi.
Talk to me a little bit about adversity, right? Has there been some moments in your life that have, I guess, challenged the person that we see today?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I'm really good at getting punched in the gut. I've had some pretty interesting left, hard lefts, let's call them. So I went moving into Vegas, being out there, that relationship falling apart, that was a huge slap in the face that I had to like overcome. And I ended up in another relationship after that. And that person ended up killing themselves while we were on vacation together. And that completely changed my whole life. It destroyed me, completely destroyed me, like mentally, physically, and emotionally, financially, all of the things. I ended up moving back to Rhode Island that same, like the next day after that happened.
Wait, and I'm trying to understand this for myself. So you're on a vacation with just your partner?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're on a vacation and then he ends up killing himself?
Yeah, the day he proposed to me. He killed himself that evening.
Yeah, and this is incredible to even hear. But yeah. I think, you know, you've been able to process, and I'm sure you've done so a lot of work now past it. How long ago was this?
About 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so go ahead.
So that moved me back to Rhode Island.
Because you said at this time now, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but so you were living at, I'm trying to understand, you were living in Vegas.
Yep.
This happens. You're like, I need to get out of here. So you don't go back to Vegas.
Yeah,
you go
back home. I couldn't. I was suicidal. As soon as that happened, I became suicidal myself. And we're talking about someone who has fought her whole life and scratched and crawled and ran and like done anything I could to succeed. Like I created my career. I created my life and it was hard. And like, I did not have support. And so here I was, and all of a sudden, all of that was taken from me. Like my future was ripped away, and everything that I used to define myself was taken. And I didn't know who the fuck I was. I had a full existential meltdown because I couldn't do the job. I wasn't the job anymore. My finances were tied up in his estate. I had no money. My future of my life with someone who I dialed into was just taken away from me. And then I blamed myself completely for his death. And I didn't see it. I didn't see his mental health issues. I didn't see the medications. I didn't see any of it. Now I see it. But like, I didn't have that education then. And so I thought it was my fault. And so I didn't want to feel the pain anymore that I was feeling at that moment in time. And so I wanted to like leave. Like I couldn't deal with the amount of pain that I was feeling. And I could deal with pain, not like this.
Yeah, no, this is different. How do you begin to rebuild at that time? I mean, I think you did the smartest thing possible. And I'm sure your family and friends were supportive of going back, because I couldn't imagine anything different than that. But after that happens and now, you know, things settle, how do you begin to rebuild, right? The no snooze mindset is all about continuing to progress in life. We know that there's ebbs and flows and there's really high points of life and really low points. But it's encouraging others, listeners, to find ways to build their own lives back. What would you say was, I guess, the first step? And how did you continue an upward, or was it an upward trajectory? Was it, you know, a lot of
peaks? It was not straight up. It was, it's never straight up. So I had to make a decision. This thing was going to define me, or I was going to use this thing to catapult my life. And even though that I like couldn't deal with the pain that I was feeling, intuitively I knew that this thing was not going to fucking crush me. Like, I would go back and forth between the feeling of like not wanting to feel the pain and knowing that this wasn't going to be it. This wasn't going to be it. This is not the thing. If I'm going out, this wasn't going to be how I was going out.
But that in itself is an incredible mindset to have because, you know.
And all day long, this fluctuated.
Right.
So like it was this really intense battle with myself of choosing myself is what was actually happening. And I had to make the choice and I had to just realize all I had to do was get my ass back to therapy the next day. Mm. So like I started breaking this mountain because everything felt like a mountain that I had to climb. All I had to do was make it through that day and get myself back to my therapist's office the next day. Small micro steps. I had to plan out my afternoons and evenings. So I had things to do in my mind and just kind of compartmentalize each part of the day and just get my ass back to therapy. That's how I had to do it. And it eventually became the best thing that's ever happened to me. This thing that almost killed me became the best thing that has ever happened to me. And I understand that a lot of people might not understand what I'm saying right now, but everything that I've had to deal with because of that suicide forced me to look at everything that I have built myself on at that moment in time. And it forced me to do a lot of work with myself that I don't know if I would have ever done. It forced me to look at my relationship with my parents. It forced me to look at my childhood trauma. It forced me to do this work. You don't sign up to do that shit usually until you're forced to. I am a very resistant human being. No one's going to tell me what the fuck to do. I was forced. And I had to make the choice. I was choosing myself. And throughout the process of rebuilding, I still didn't know what I was doing. I never knew that I wanted to create this wellness brand, right? I just had to choose myself and realize whatever I was like resisting, whatever was causing me discomfort, whatever I didn't want to do, I had to do that. Whatever, because that resistance within me was holding me back. So it became like a lot of my clients now like laugh about this because if it makes you want to throw up, if I say something to you and it makes you nauseous, you have to do the thing. So that's how I ended up on a TEDx stage, to be very honest with you. I realized throughout this journey, I ended up going to Peru. I ended up doing all this work on myself. I did some ayahuasca. I ended up in this network of people. They saw me. They forced me to do a podcast I didn't want to do. I didn't want to do the first podcast with James. I think it was like 6 months or 4 months he called me and I was like, nope, nope, no. And then finally I was like, fuck it. And I just realized that that happened for me to help other people. And it had nothing to do with me anymore. It had nothing to do with my shit, my trauma, my childhood shit. It had to do with the impact that I was creating in this world. And once I took myself out of the equation and realized the change that I started creating by talking about this stuff, by talking about what I had gone through, I realized that we're all going through this stuff and we don't talk about it. And everyone's suffering in silence. And there's nothing wrong with you or me or any of us. We're all going through the same exact shit. And why aren't we talking about it? And so I just started talking about all of it. I ended up in a leadership program in Texas. And in this program, I had mentioned like this intention. I got really clear with my intention in life and it was service. It was helping as many people as humanly possible and starting a real estate investment company. That was my two intentions. And one was going to financially support the other. So I didn't have to worry about money while starting a speaking career. And I mentioned that in this leadership program. And one of the guys, Eric, who actually passed away, he said to me, well, if you want to create as much change as possible, you need to get on the biggest stage. And I was like, okay. And he's like, and that's TED. And I was like, fine, I'll do that. And he was like, okay. And so I just was like, okay, how do I do this? And I started Googling, how do you apply for TED Talks? I ended up finding this group of people that I hired to help me create my TED Talk. I had no idea what I was going to talk about. I had no idea what I was doing. And I just had to bet on myself and realize, like, I presented this idea. I ended up hiring this this company. These two people started consulting with me. They started formulating, like, you know, my life into, like, categories and, like, what was, like, kind of a pillar of what I believed in. Mm-hmm. And we started creating a speech. And I created a 1 minute and a 2 minute video. I sent it off to, like, a bunch of locations. And then I got accepted. And then all of a sudden I'm in London doing fucking TED Talk.
That's where it was in London.
It was in Newcastle. Yeah.
Oh my god.
And I literally had no idea what I was doing. I still don't know. Like, I do internally, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm trying to create. I know that I'm trying to help other people. And, like, this brand, like, I launched the TED thing and that went out, and I realized that I needed to capitalize on that if I was really going to be clear about helping as many people as possible. I needed to start putting out stuff on social media. And I am an introvert with some body image issues and some eating disorders involved in that. And so, super critical of myself my whole life. And here I am, like, I have a TED Talk coming out, and then I hire a social media team and they want to pump out content and, like, photos of me, and we need brand pictures. And I'm, like, dying on the inside because I don't want to be the center of attention, even though I'm on a stage. I don't want my picture taken, even though we're putting this stuff out, you know, all this content out. And it was constantly just a battle with myself, with dealing with the things that were holding me back. Like, dealing with the fact that, you know, not thinking I was good enough, my self-worth, that was the thing that kept showing up. So I'm constantly challenging that. And then pumping out all this content. And I pumped out content for about 2.5 years, not knowing at all what I was doing. Not have a fucking clue. I just wanted to help people. That was it. Get on stages, help people, do some podcasts. Still don't know. Like, it's a rodeo, right? This woman from a television show ended up reaching out to me through my social media. I was on the road show talking about mental health during COVID. I had no idea what the hell I was doing on that. Like, a PR company reaches out to me. They want to publish an article on Maxim. They want me to be in LA. Like, it was just like, what is happening? Like, I felt like I was on the snowball and I had no control of the snowball. And people were asking me to talk about the stuff that I was like, sure, but why? Like, okay, like, but I don't understand why you think that I should. Okay. No. Like, stop saying no, start saying yes, and just stop, like, hiding. I was trying to hide. And we were pumping out all this content. And I started dealing with some health stuff. And I was traveling the world. I ended up, like, all over the world about 2 years ago. And I was documenting everything online. And I was talking about, I had some thyroid stuff. I had Lyme disease. A bunch of stuff was going on with my body.
Hashimoto's too.
Hashimoto's.
Inflammation.
And because I was on these flights, I was blowing up like a balloon.
In terms of physical?
Physical.
Weight?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
The health issue was more of a eating disorder, you said.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So when did the health issues, I guess, begin?
Always. I always had health issues. I was not listening to my body. I was ignoring my body. I was thinking that I was a superhuman and I was just completely running train. So, like,
but you were training well.
I was training like a champion. And I thought I was a superhuman champion. Like, and I would just get sick and just train through it like a complete asshole. Like, so, you know, like, I was going to the gym with MRSA. Like, what?
Yeah.
Double sessions, like, with arm wrapped in Vegas, like an idiot, right? And so I just, like, my body started whispering, it started talking to me, it started yelling at me, and then it would sit me down. And when the, like, suicide happened, I got shingles for the first time. I got shingles about 45 times throughout the 2 years after.
45 times?
Yeah, in my 30s.
How does that happen?
You'd beat the shit out of yourself, you don't eat, and you overtrain, and you have too much stress.
Wow.
And you internalize it all.
Wow.
And you try to exercise it out. And, like, work out like you're an Olympic athlete and eat lettuce. Like, that's basically what you do.
Me, Sean and I off, you know, off air, I did make a joke, and I think I even told you too. We'll see where we can get you some kale.
Yeah. No, I eat a lot of food.
Yeah,
actually,
no, but... I get it. I know you do. And honestly, I want to, you know, we'll joke and stuff like that, but thank you for your vulnerability. It's actually incredible.
Thank you.
And I'm sure it still doesn't really resonate with how inspiring your story is. Because even me at times, you know, when I tell my story, I downplay it, you know, and you tend to do the same thing. Like you just scurried past like a whole bunch of things, yeah, but it's very admirable. And I believe you're helping, you know, on a major scale.
Thank you.
And it's not easy to do, you know.
No.
Do you still battle the, not feeling qualified?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how do you work through that?
I just tell myself to shut the fuck up.
And like, you just do.
Yeah, now it's like a 30-second reel. You know, it used to be like a debilitating week. And then it became like 3 days. And then it was a couple hours. And now it's like just a 30-minute, like, second clip in my head where I'm like, how many more degrees do you need? What other Ivy League school do you need to go to? Like, what certificates do you need on the wall to realize you have a PhD in trauma? Like, knock it off. You are qualified to talk about this. Like, every person's qualified to talk about their life experience.
Right.
So, like, knock it off. You know, and so that is just, you know, doing the work with yourself and getting that down to like just like a brush off, you know, like knock it off. Like,
yeah,
you
yeah. know. And it's backed by real life science,
yeah.
if you will, in terms of
Absolutely.
Experience. And I think experience is the best science there is.
Case study number 101.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now.
Face your fears and ask for your dreams to come true.
Yeah.
What does that mean? So I get the face your fears. You just explained that well, but who you asking?
The universe. Absolutely.
Walk us and talk us through that a little bit. What does that look like for you? Is that a practice of yours that you do? Are you
yeah.
manifesting? Because I have an issue with the whole manifestation word.
Well, you gotta
know?
Go do the thing.
Correct.
You
right?
Because there's execute on the
manifestation. There's a lot of like, I'm
and
gonna
then
just
not fuck it up.
I'm gonna
too.
Speak.
Yeah.
I'm gonna speak success into my life, but I'm gonna just be a couch potato. Like that's the piece, you know, that I cannot stand.
Well, sixth step.
Talk
number six is execution. Like you can call it in, you can set the frequency, you can set the vibration, but you have to get the fucking thing done. Like the opportunity will present itself. It is your choice to execute on said opportunity. Like opportunities show up for people and they don't do shit with it because they're afraid. Now, if you're going to manifest something, you have to step into it, which is usually the hardest part.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think also the hardest part is initially asking. Like ask the universe for it. It will show up for you. Like, and then you have to step into it and then not fuck it up.
You're speaking to my soul personally. I've shared this before, I believe, but, you know, I've been exploring this whole journey with faith. Mm-hmm. And I heard this, I guess, concept of like we continue to pray for the same things every day. Right. Me, I drive on this bridge. It's beautiful scenery. It hits me. I pray for the same thing. But as I've evolved in that journey, something hit me like, OK, when my daughter, if my daughter were to ask me for something and I say yes to it, it's already done. I'd be offended if she came and asked me for that same exact thing every single day. So instead, now my manifestation has turned to thanking for what's already in progress,
mm-hmm.
right? I make the statement, I ask for what it is that I want, and then I begin to thank.
Gratitude.
I'm grateful, but now I'm also backing it by the action to get there. Because mm-hmm. if I'm just grateful with no intent or action, I don't believe anything happens. But so you're talking to me right now. This is what I'm going through.
I think one of the biggest things that changed my life was getting clear on my intention and what I was trying to create. I didn't know what it was. There's like a difference between asking for something and asking exactly for something. I didn't know what I was exactly asking for. I had no clue. And I kept being shown opportunities that I had to step into. And like, as I didn't realize what I was doing and I didn't understand any of this world that we're talking about
mm-hmm.
right now
yeah.
then. And it wasn't until I went to a Joe Dispenza Advanced Weekly Training January
Beast.
Of this year in Colombia. And I didn't know what I've been doing for 4 years prior to that. Until I got there, I didn't know why I wanted to go to that event in the first place. I just knew I had to. I wasn't drinking his Kool-Aid. I had read his book right when I had done the interview with Sean, like pre-COVID, like COVID time. Okay. I read
2020, 2021.
His superhuman book.
Dr. Joe
Dispenza. Yeah. And I was like, this guy knows things. Like, he would just like hit me, right? And then I put the book down. And I didn't go back to Joe. He knows things. He's on to things. Like, that guy is dialed in, like, spoke to my soul, didn't do anything with it. I don't know why, like, after, like, what, 3 or 4 years later, I decided, like, out of nowhere that I needed to go to a Joe Dispenza event. Like, there was nothing that, no, like, nothing came through. It's just me waking up being like, oh, that's a good idea. And then I just signed up. And that event showed me what I had been doing intuitively the whole time. And then I felt like I came back with, like, my sword was sharpened. Mm. And I knew how to use it. And that's when that launched.
Yeah.
And I realized what I had been doing the whole time with my social media, when I didn't know the whole time what I was doing with my social media. And I started to, like, dial it all in. And I had been, you know, for that whole time with, you know, after TED and seeing myself and seeing that I couldn't hide anymore and traveling the world and sharing all of this. And I had started following women that were sharing about their Hashimoto's and their stuff, and they had really inspired me. And I started seeing their doctors. I started seeing their doctors for shingles because I was like, this, you know, one of the women that I'd follow was Kiersey Godsoe, and the other one was Jennifer Fisher. She's a jewelry designer. And I see Jennifer's doctor now, and I see Kiersey's doctor now, and they're both in New York. And they both were dealing with the same things that I was dealing with. And because they shared on their platform, my entire body has changed and my health and wellness has completely changed. And because of that, I dedicated the fact that I was going to be sharing about my health journey online. And because I decided to do that, I ended up creating a product. And I ended up, like, getting very dialed into lymphatic drainage and realizing inflammation in the body and really focusing on inflammation and getting pulled into Dr. Cole's book, Ketotarian, which that was a massive shift for me as well. You know, realizing the importance of the oils that we put into our body and legumes and things that I was kind of not aware of. I became very aware of, and I was sharing and people were watching my body transform.
Right. And then you're sharing.
And I wasn't trying to lose any weight. I wasn't trying to change my body. That was the first thing I had to really, really realize with myself, was that I had to heal. It had nothing to do with the external anymore. And whatever the external looked like, I had to let go of it. And that was, like, the thing that had tied me down for so long, because I wanted to look like the certain thing.
Right.
My whole life, I had literally been starving and overtraining to try to become the thing. And I never got there. I was just always getting so inflamed because my body was angry and it was getting sick and I wasn't taking care of it, that I had to let go completely of that thing and heal from the inside out. And I shared that healing online and ended up in this lymphatic circle with the best lymphatic masseuses in the world, because I had been flying all over the world. I was trying all these different types of, like, services, like Icoon, like LPG, body sculpting, Sheila Perez method. I ended up in this network of these lymphatic, like, masters. And I realized, like, I ended up with J-Lo's lymphatic masseuse and Elle McPherson's lymphatic masseuse. And I, like, realized I literally didn't have J-Lo's bankroll. Like, I couldn't afford to, like, travel the world. Yeah, yep. And then also add a grand onto each end to get these things. And I was like, okay, where's the thing at home? Like, we get a facial at a spa and you have a skincare routine at home. Where's my lymphatic skincare routine at home? There.
Hold on. Let me stop you there. What is breakdown? Cause I want to get into, and we're going to touch on all of it, but what is the lymphatic system? Right. It's like, for people who don't okay. know, right? Like, take me back to that. What is the lymphatic system and its responsibility in the body?
So the lymphatic system removes toxins from the body. So how toxins get from, let's say, your bloodstream, your muscles, like the rest of your body out to, let's say, the organs that extract things mm-hmm. is through the lymphatic system. It's the filtration pipes of the body, right? So lymphatic system, like sweating under your armpits, that's your lymphatic system. Sweating in the back of your legs, that's your lymphatic system. That's ridding your body of toxins that through sweat glands. But they get there through the lymphatic system. And they're in modules or nodules all throughout your body that like line your entire body. They're literally the pathways. I knew nothing about any of this.
And now, yeah, like most people don't. Right. CV, you're sitting back there. You know about the big lymphatic?
I know. I sweat a lot. That's about it.
That's your new nickname, by the way, the big lymphatic.
The big sweat? Oh.
No. So now, so you go from not knowing any of this to now you, part of your routine every day is, you know,
is activating lymph nodes and,
the
yeah.
lymph nodes. Wow. How does this product launch? And how do you go from... So before the launch, you go from a corporate model, obviously, right, to the entrepreneurial skills.
Well, I left corporate after UFC. I was no longer in corporate. Okay. So that pushed me out of, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I need to make money. Like, I know I'm passionate about real estate. So I'm going to get my license and like make some money as a real estate agent mm-hmm. and maybe learn about some investments because I didn't want to be an agent. I wanted to be an investor,
right?
I had started investing at 26. I had done some stuff there. I stepped away from that to like have the security of my career. And I almost bought more, but I didn't. So I had that like innate want already. So I was like doing that, mm-hmm. right? Then also here's my service thing, the speaking. So that energy kind of was like spiraling already. It was mm-hmm. like what was going on. And I was like kind of messing around with real estate and making some money and enough to like sustain, but I wasn't living the lifestyle I was before. And that was pissing me off, honestly, because I had taken such a hit emotionally and all the things. Like I wanted to get back where I was, even though I didn't realize I was never going to be back to where I was. I still thought then I was trying to do that. So I got pulled into venture capital. That's how that started. And so I was like hustling. I was consulting in VC. The UFC sold the first time to IMG. All those executives were terminated. Those guys went out and did their own venture capital stuff. I got a bunch of phone calls 1 week and I was like, I guess I'm starting a consulting company. Like it literally has been like this. Like, I guess this is what I'm doing. Like, we're going to talk on the show. Sure. Like, so I ended up starting a consulting company while I started the real estate thing. And I realized I went through that. I made a bunch of money. I burned myself out and was like, we're done. Like, that was like the final bit of information that I needed to know that I was no longer going to be making millionaires, billionaires. Like, done. Why wasn't I doing this for myself? That's like when that became very clear to me. Like, we're done. Like, I knew I had to do it for myself. I didn't know how. I didn't know what I was doing, but I still had these intentions. No. And it was just like putting the energy out there and trying different things and putting the energy out and connecting with people. And then, you know, the podcast launched and then I'm like, all of these crazy freaking things were happening. And I'm like, okay, like we're just riding the wave here. Mm-hmm. Health stuff starts. I'm in the leadership program. I ended up, you know, TED happens. I'm pumping out content. I'm full entrepreneur at this point. I am trying to find the skincare routine for the lymphatic system at home. And I find something and I'm using it. It's a wooden paddle and I was holding the wooden paddle and it slipped on my hand. I broke 4 fingernails.
And these nails are no joke. If you're not on YouTube, you need to check these bad boys out.
And because I broke 4 fingernails, I was pissed off enough to solve the problem. Why doesn't this have a handle? How come I can't hold this? I went to RISD. I'm like, creative strategy, mm-hmm. business mindset, right? I'm always solving problems creatively, whether business, corporations, companies, that's what my brain does well. Yep. I have this product. I broke 4 nails. I was pissed. And I started creating prototypes. And I just started having them made. And I didn't know what like quality I wanted or what I was really trying to do, but I wanted it to like work better with my body. And so I had probably 17 or 18 wooden ones made, different designs. And then I was like, why am I using wood? Like, why are the facial gua shas made with Bayan stone and there's no Bayan stone body gua sha?
What's a gua sha?
A gua sha is a tool that women use mostly for their face. It's about this big. And you do like gua sha, like up your face to like remove fine lines, remove inflammation from your body or for your face. Kind of like a preventative to Botox.
And so this is now
the same thing for your body.
This is for the body.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So I just opened. Yeah. I just opened Diamandia. And this is, it kind of feels like stone.
Yeah. It's Bayan stone.
It's what?
Bayan stone. Bayan so it's a stone. Traditional Chinese stone.
Wow. And on the box here, and I just want to know how this all works. Reduce swelling, boost circulation, sculpt muscles, remove toxins from the body, and revitalize immunity.
Mm-hmm.
In a stone.
In a stone.
Because I know my guys, they don't know what this is. Right. And now I'm going to be ahead of the game. Because I'm going to be using this thing. But so, all right, coach me through it because sounds great. I'm not familiar with this.
So you use it after you shower. So
after you shower.
If I'm going to like say, we're going to make a shift in your routine.
I'm looking at this thing like, bow, bow. This is like a, you
know. Like brass knuckles.
Yeah, it's literally brass knuckles for the body.
So you're going to dry brush before you shower and then you're going to use that after you shower.
Wait, you're going to dry what?
Dry brush.
Dry brush your body.
Yeah. Dry brush your body.
See, is, but not because I'm hairy. I'm not like brushing because I'm just a hairy dude. Right. Like I'm brushing my body.
You're brushing your
See,
body.
See, dudes are not doing this.
They have started. I'm noticing a lot of male sales right now.
Well, no, I mean, and now they're going to go up even more. I can't even put this thing in the box. What's wrong with me here? There we go. All right. Good. And I think I did it wrong. Go ahead.
Before you shower, you want to activate your lymph nodes. Like I was talking about, there's lymph nodes under your armpits, in your hip flexors, behind your knees, in your abdominal area. You want to activate those, and then you want to dry brush towards the heart. Starting at the limbs, come in towards the heart. You're boosting the circulation in your body. You're like waking up your skin, and you're waking up your body to like move fluid and toxins.
Now, is this why you see on certain people, like especially as they get older, right? I remember on my grandfather specifically, he had like a lot of like dead skin on the back of his legs and on his, you know, and I know it's from dryness, but if somebody implements this type of routine into their life, that
helps. Yeah, it sheds dead skin, exfoliates for you as
gotcha.
Well.
Okay.
So it's like waking all the skin up.
Right.
Biggest organ.
The skin.
Right. We don't take care of it.
Wow.
Science.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So you're waking it up, then you shower, then you put on lotion or oil, and then you use the tool. And you just, the same thing, you move the fluid into those lymph nodes and you activate the skin. And like, you just get it, like, you want to get red, essentially. So you see it get red. You don't want to like kill yourself or like cause bruising, but you want to like activate your body and like, you'll notice a complete difference.
Wait, hold on. I have some questions. This is a lot. This is a lot.
Go.
So this stone, you pass it through your skin. Correct? Or you like brush it, right?
Here.
Thank you. We need a little bit of a show and tell.
I'm not.
Because
you can't do this one dry though. I'm leaving my shirt up. But you can't do this one dry though, because
if you can put it up a little bit for the camera.
This needs to be.
So you would be naked.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you would dip yourself in lotion or oil and then take this,
It's hard to do show and tell with
that. Flat side first.
As best as we can.
And then you move it towards your heart. So I'm going to move this away. You want to come in like this.
So she's,
This with obviously, but for a guy, like I have hair. That's going to yank my
Well, that's
hair
why
out.
You put oil on.
Too. I'm Greek.
You don't have hair like we do.
But that's why she said you put oil on, which would have
put
to be the first
so
have part of the
oil.
Routine that I would have to
Absolutely.
Implement.
Absolutely. You have to put oil on.
But I'm already greasy. So like, well.
No.
I have natural oils.
So lotion you can use.
Yeah, absolutely. Or okay. Oil, whatever.
And does this also help with tightness of the muscles?
Mm-hmm.
Does.
Yeah.
Why don't we know about this?
We don't talk about it.
Yeah. Why isn't this part of like normal routines?
I don't know. That's
but
what
it is
I'm
now.
Doing here.
But it is now. We're solving problems.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I started this process and I ended up soft launching on Instagram. I sold like 500 in the first 3 hours. And I was like, okay, we're doing this, I guess.
So you're onto something.
Yeah. I like didn't know what I was, again, I didn't know what I was doing. And I just had to bet on myself. And I bought like a 500 run. And I didn't even have the product in house when I went launched it. Mm-hmm. And I just launched.
What kind of stone is that?
Bayan. It's traditional Chinese Bayan stone.
Oh, it's heavy.
I mean, it looks.
Yeah, no. It's,
you want to feel it?
It's definitely heavy.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna throw it.
No. We break. Oh, that will break.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? Because it's stone.
Huh. Yeah, so stone on stone. That's why this was created like this, so you can keep this in here on your counter.
We might have a problem because I'm basically a brick wall, so I might break the stone if I utilize.
No,
I. talk to me, I guess, about because this is. I mean, your habits are now next level, right? I'm always intrigued by people's habits and routines. It really resonated with me earlier in the episode when you said that you basically used to just beat your body down because I tend to do the same. What else are you incorporating? Like, what does a day look like for Diamandia? Seriously, like when you're waking up, I know you're sitting by yourself for an hour and a half, but besides that,
yeah. So I do an hour and a half in the morning and then I get up and I usually have some coffee. If I'm like, it depends on what's going on in my universe. It depends on what's going on in my universe and like what needs attention. But I try to immediately respond to people that need time sensitive. And then I'm off the computer. I'll see what inventory has come in for orders, how backlogged we are. My apartment has turned into a fulfillment center. I'm fulfilling inside of my living room and my guest room. So I'm in the fulfillment center trying to figure out where we are with everything. I have three products now and I have three bundles. So it's growing and I'm just trying to figure the fuck out as I do it. Responding to emails and then figuring out what marketing content would I need to do socially if I have to create stuff, if I have to record stuff, who is... interviews I have, do they need content? I'll take a break usually around 1 o'clock and go for a walk. And if I'm really in a stressful situation, I'll do another meditation, a walking meditation for an hour and 20 minutes.
Are these are guided?
Yeah, guided.
What app do you use?
I use Joe Dispenza.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I haven't steered from him. I do the same one in the morning every day.
Really?
The pineal gland. And I do the same one in the afternoon.
You need to share that with me.
I absolutely will.
Yeah.
And then if I'm in real estate, usually my afternoon is consumed by real estate. So I have a transaction right now in Austin, Texas that's going on. It's been very intense. And it was another one of those things where I was like, I asked the universe for it and it showed up. So I am in the middle of developing 45 acres in Austin. So
small project.
Yeah. And tiny. I mean, I asked to level myself up in real estate and then it showed up for me and then I had to step into it and I had to really show up. So that has been very triggering for me. Absolutely.
What's the timeline on this project?
3 years, but it's real estate. So it's end development is a totally.
I was
going to
say, so it's development
game.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
Because 45 acres is not a property.
No, it's no. We're putting roads in. We're cutting up to 35 lots. So my partner's in LA. So just with the time change, the afternoon usually gets consumed by that. And then I try to be done by 5.
What was the first real estate move? For you. You said you were 26 when you got in the game.
Mm-hmm.
What was it for somebody who has not gotten the game yet? And what would what would your advice be to somebody who hasn't gotten the game, but they know that they're supposed to be in? What's the play?
How much risk do you want to take?
Give me two scenarios. Somebody who has some capital available, and then maybe somebody who's looking to leverage OPM.
I always leverage OPM.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yep.
So I think the first thing that people think in real estate is that they don't have any money so they can't invest. That's not true. That is the number one preventative for someone to move forward. And you're not saying anything about money. You're saying that you don't believe in yourself enough to ask someone for money. That's what you're really saying.
Right.
So like that should never be the issue. And if you're looking to get involved, you have to understand how much energy and time you want to put into one property. You need to know that, like, is this going to consume your life every day for 6 months and then you're out? Do you want this to consume your life for 6 months to 9 months? And then you want to collect rent and deal with a property manager for 2 hours a week, every week. Like, really understand how much energy and effort that you want to put behind whatever you're trying to do. That will change what you're trying to do in real estate. Never let money get in the way of investing. There's an abundance of money in the world. It is prevents people from doing so many things. Mm-hmm. Like, money is never the problem. Self-worth is the problem. So like, what do you want? Like, what are you looking to do? If you're looking to make another $100,000 a year, I would say go for a 2-3 family. Like, invest in that. Put some money into it. Figure out your like interest rates and like how you're going to come out the other end of it and like your growth. That's like an easy, safer play. If you're looking to make like fuck you money and like really do some shit, I'd start apartment syndication or development. That's where like real money, but higher risk, much higher risk. So like what ball game do you want to play in is really it. And if you're going to spend the energy and effort, and this is a, like a huge learning curve for me, and I had to learn this the hard way a lot, was you're putting the same amount of energy and effort flipping like $1 million home than you are a $10 million home. It's only a zero. That's the only thing that's changed is the zero. And like, can you handle that frequency?
Yeah.
That's very it. Good.
Yeah, no. That's something. So I deal with that now, right? I'm only involved in two properties. Looking for the third, have been able to leverage myself, but haven't, you know, gone yet. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm letting it play out. But the energy and effort is a huge thing that I think often, even for me, I miss because I'm thinking of the other risk factors and I'm not focusing on what it really takes and what it's going to take. Because if somebody says, it's funny, if somebody was just like, oh, here you go, here's the money. Now a whole new set of issues comes into it. Because what if I want to be at the park with my daughter?
Right. All the different excuses.
You know, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
No, so that's a great piece. Thank you. You do a lot. Very impressive.
Thank you.
Time management, though. Let's talk to the listeners on how you prioritize all these projects and all these things that kind of go on. Like how, what's your tips and strategies that you know to be true in terms of effectively managing time?
I have to do the work on myself before I do any of this stuff.
Always.
Always.
Like, non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable. Learned this the hard way. Would not be here right now if I didn't. Like, I couldn't do any of this at all. And whenever I get in a space where I am not managing my time well and I am not handling things and I am emotionally responding to things, it's because I haven't done the work with myself.
Okay, let me challenge this. Why do you think so many people who only, and by only, because maybe they have families too, but maybe they only have a 9-to-5 and they still can't find the time to prioritize themselves.
Because they don't think they're worthy of it.
Is that what you think it is?
Absolutely. I like know that's what it is. Because I have to do this. Because that's more important. Because this is more important. Because I didn't, like, you can get up 15 minutes earlier and meditate for 15 minutes. Like, you got to bring Timmy to school at 7 o'clock. You know what time he has to go to school every day. Get up at 6:45. Like, I don't have any time for anyone's excuses anymore. Right. Like, if you don't put yourself first, no one else is going to. And this doesn't mean being selfish. Mm-hmm. This doesn't mean not bringing your kid to school right. and not showing up for your kid or your family. But you have to show up for yourself before you can show up for them because you cannot pour from an empty cup. You're going to be a shitty parent. You're going to be a shitty partner. You're going to be a shitty whatever you're trying to do because you're grasping at straws. Like, it's the same. Like, the term hangry exists, right, because of food. But, like, that exists for our emotional well-being and our like mental health. Mm. There's no hangry for it, right?
Yep.
But we keep pouring from empty cups.
And then also I think it's challenging for individuals with that example that you just gave about little Timmy, right? Little Timmy's got to be there on time. But then there's also going to be the days that you wake up early and little Timmy's going to wake up early too.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because he's got a bellyache and he's going to have to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where a lot of people tap out. And it's okay not to do the thing maybe for one day.
Yeah, then you get back on the horse.
I have a personal rule of never allowing those bad habits or a situation to transpire more than 2 days.
Right.
Because you can justify it at any level. And this, I believe, is a real issue for people. You know, and I see it at work where I am. I see it in my personal circles. And you try to like speak some life into these people. And their mindset is just, oh no, I have to be selfless.
That right? doesn't take care provide of, you any value.
Right.
That actually takes away from your value. Like being selfless, that like I have to give so much that like I'm not important.
Mm-hmm.
Like that actually shows that you don't have any value for yourself. And like this specific question that you're asking me, like, how do I do all of this? How do I pour into all of these people and like maintain them so that they can help me?
Mm-hmm.
It's because I pour into myself.
Right. You like, have it available.
And I don't get everything done every day. And I fuck up things all the time. And I make mistakes that cost so much money. And I don't blame myself. And I like figure out what I did wrong and fix it. And then tomorrow's another day. Like, nobody's perfect and you're going to fall off the wheel. And like I hit snooze this morning.
Yeah, this is crazy. Diamandia. Listen. We were talking off air and basically she tells CV and I, she goes, yo, I snoozed so much today. It was ridiculous. So are you a snoozer?
No, I actually don't ever set an alarm.
You don't set an alarm.
No,
That's a good problem to have. But so scientifically, you know about that snooze button. Right. Like you getting back into that fake pattern of sleep is really detrimental to your whole sleep cycle.
Mm-hmm.
We won't get into that, though. But so
I just wake up usually at 6 o'clock every morning.
Just clockwork.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you a good sleeper?
I am a better sleeper now. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things that have happened in your life.
Yeah.
That could definitely.
I used to work out more than I would sleep for most of my life.
Really?
Yeah. But now I sleep more than I work out. So that's a good shift.
Yeah. I want to stay on that health kick for a little bit. We were talking about some stuff off air. You, I believe, mentioned peanut oils even in this conversation here. I think it's one of the subject matters that I think we as individuals are most ignorant on. And myself, you know, being included, I was giving you examples off air as well. I have Crohn's disease. I shared that with you. The audience kind of is familiar with my story there. But why are peanut oils so bad? And like, how do you get away from that when it seems like every single ingredient on the back of a label, if you actually look, whether this is this new healthy protein bar that's just come out, because a lot of people will say, listen, I know whole foods are great, right? That's the way to stay away from these peanut oils. And you're going to cook with fresh olive oil. Great, cool. But now when you can't do that and you're trying to still stay healthy and you pick up this bar and you look on the back and you see that canola oil or whatever sunflower oil, whatever peanut oil it is, most of us don't know about it. Right?
Yeah.
So give me a little bit on how you, I guess, well, the problem with it and then how you stay away from it.
So all those oils besides coconut, avocado, and olive oil, those are the oils we want.
Those are the big three that we want.
Yeah, we want, right? Coconut, avocado, olive, right? All of those things come from the ground. Coconuts, avocado, and olive, right?
Don't coconuts come from the tree?
Right, yeah. But they're from... They're not a soybean isolate, you know, genetically modified, created from something that didn't exist. Is every other oil that we're going to talk about is created from something that didn't exist, right? Genetically modified, compressed is. And same thing with gums, guar gum, xanthan gum. Xanthan and guar gum are created from mold that we genetically create, genetically modify mold, and then we take and create xanthan gum from mold. And mold toxicity, we're going to start hearing a lot about mold toxicity and people getting really sick from that.
So we want to avoid the ingredient, because it's on so many things where it says xanthan gum on the back.
Anything with a gum. Carob gum, xanthan gum, guar gum, gum, and then any oil that is not the oil that we just said we do not want to consume. That is going to be a big problem for us.
Yeah, this is extremely helpful though for people, because I mean, CV, would you agree with what I'm saying, that this is not really talked about? You know, we talk about almost everything else besides this stuff. So even if it's something, and I love small takeaways like this, right? So this I think is very valuable for individuals. Start looking at the back of your food items, and just getting familiar, even if you don't want to know what that one product does. Okay, cool. But now you've heard a couple of things that you should look out for to avoid, start applying it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And soybean too, with like soybean isolate is another way that they slide it in there. Like canola oil is in everything. Canola oil is awful.
And when you're saying awful, you're talking about the internal inflammation.
Absolutely.
Does Diamandia Gua Sha help with that or
It removes toxins.
It does.
But like nothing is going to combat the fact that you're consuming toxins.
Right.
Like we're going to try to get that out of your system. You have to stop putting the toxins in your body, right? Like there's only so much external thing you can do. You have to stop putting the poison in, right? And I think Dr. Will Cole's book, Ketotarian, does a really good job scientifically breaking everything down. He also has the book Inflammation Spectrum, which I think is very helpful.
Yep.
This is a game of inflammation. This is not a game about weight. And I think that is a huge thing for people to understand. Like, you're not trying to lose weight. It's usually not fat. It's inflammation in your body. And making those small two changes, you can lose like 10 pounds. You know, like people, you know, have watched my body completely change over the past couple of years. I eat cupcakes, like 12 of them. I just made these cupcakes,
CV's language
these
now.
Fudge, you know, cupcakes with frosting. And, you know, people think that I'm like, I don't eat, or I'm like not eating like X, Y, and Z, that I only eat, you know, whatever. But I'm constantly eating food that I want to eat. But if it doesn't have the inflammation ingredients and if it's clean, then you can eat as much as you want. It doesn't matter. It's not, it doesn't have to be restrictive. You just can't put a bunch of garbage in your food and think you can eat 12 cupcakes.
Right.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Eating disorders.
Yes.
How'd you work through this?
Just love myself. Realize what I was actually doing to myself.
Which was what?
Constricting myself because I didn't think I was worthy of it.
Is that, does it stem, do eating disorders stem from physical insecurities, mental insecurities? Is it all of the above?
Yeah.
And an emotional, I guess, attachment to what you believe food is going to do to you?
I think there's a level of perfectionism that you're trying to achieve because you think if you get to a certain size or look, then someone will love you. Like you're worthy of love if you look a certain way, or and that you don't, you can't get that and you're not perfect enough.
What would you tell somebody struggling from an eating disorder right now?
Go get some help. Go talk to somebody. I think we look down upon help, you know, and I'm not talking about like friends and family, you know, community is really important, but like professional. I think therapy is one of the greatest things, especially as you get older. There's little accountability for your own actions. And we usually don't tell our friends and family or partners everything. Right. Very rarely do we tell them everything, right?
Yeah.
Who knows everything? Nobody.
Well, just yourself.
And then you start making up stories about why you have to do this unhealthy behavior. And then it becomes so consistent, it's healthy for you because you've been doing it for so long. Nothing ever bad's happened.
Right.
So it's fine for you. Like, that's not. And that's how we end up in these patterns of behavior. And I think having an outside professional to help you manage this stuff and make you accountable for your own shit is really, really important and like guide you through it.
What would you tell me in terms of me as a father, right? You mentioned earlier in the episode, you said daddy issues.
Yeah.
What would you tell a young father or even mother, parent, about the importance of instilling maybe confidence and stability into your young ones from your own personal experience?
Well, I think you just answered that question, didn't you?
No, how I'm saying, how would you?
How?
Yeah. Like what did you need that you did not receive?
I think telling your child that you love them unconditionally, no matter what, is really important. And that whatever they want to do is amazing if they've like follow through on that. And they don't have to be anything but themselves and to like own themselves.
Do you think the words have to be backed? And I'm asking here, backed by a true level of belief? Or do you think that the words are enough just to hear them?
I think everything needs to be backed by a true level of belief. And I think smart kids will see right through bullshit. So I'm a big integrity human. So I think belief.
Yeah, belief is big. Well, because I know right now I could tell my daughter anything and she's just pew. But sometimes I might not believe that she could really go ride that bike right now because I know she needs those training wheels. But if I tell her, you know, she's going to keep trying, which is a beautiful thing. And the thing that I see now, though, just as a parent, is children are so innocent. And it's the adults and society that ends up changing them, right? We change them because you don't come out with any, you know.
Dump your shit on them.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. Even my daughter, sometimes she's very animated, but in public, I'm like, oh, easy, baby, easy. I should be like, be you sometimes. You know, just be you. Be you. Because we start to
shrink
them. You know, and it's a very interesting thing that I'm seeing. And again, she's only three, but it's always something that I'm interested to hear about. Anything we didn't discuss today that you want to share, touch on? We'll listen back and be like, damn it, I missed 58.
We covered a lot of stuff.
We did. We absolutely did. And I didn't even expect to go all over the place.
I think
like
that
we did,
people don't need to know exactly what they're supposed to be doing. I think there's a lot of pressure on like kids and young adults to like know you want to be a doctor or know you want to do this or know like what your career. I mean, you were very fortunate to know what you wanted. Like I was not. I've been figuring this shit out along the way.
Right.
And that's okay. And like betting on yourself 100% is the only thing you have to do. And knowing that, like, if you get punched, you're going to pick yourself back up and you're going to figure it out and you're going to go, like, do it again. And there's nothing wrong with that.
You know, even when we were talking off air, so what Diamandi is referring to is in terms of my, you know, professional career, I did know what I wanted to do early, but I'm thinking about this now, even just in terms of this podcast, right? We were talking and then I'm talking to you, hearing your story about, like, I'm just going, I'm just doing. And that's what we've been doing now for 3 years. And we didn't necessarily have the direction, right? We knew that we wanted to talk about certain topics, help people, build a community of like-minded individuals. And we've done that. But now it's starting to shift. And there's these little signs that are like, go here. Publicist hits me up. Hey, let's write an article on your 150 episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the attention, but like having an article, me standing with my, hands, arms crossed, a little weird. But so I'm trying to step into that. And what you're saying just throughout this whole episode is really resonating with just our brand in general. And it's inspiring for us to just keep going.
Don't be afraid to mess things up. Like go on tour, like do the thing. Like, I remember like how many things I've screwed up. Like that first television show I did, I bombed. I bombed so bad. I was so nervous.
Were you sweating looking back?
I was.
Were your lymph nodes going crazy?
I can't even look at it because it was so bad. Oh, you know, I mean, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like now I don't care. You know, now it's like whatever, but it's okay to like mess up. You know, it's okay to not be perfect. We all start with like no followers, right? We all start with like no community. We all start with not knowing what we're doing. We all start not ever publishing that thing.
Right.
You have to just do it and just bottom out and pick yourself back up and go.
Is there a mantra in your life that you once lived by that no longer live by?
Oh, God. that I no longer live by. Mm-hmm. I think I've burned so much of my old like toxic shit that I'm sure there is. Yeah. But
because as I'm asking the question, I'm thinking more of like your output, how for so long you thought the output.
Yeah, the outcome.
Like
I was
that,
the executor.
Right.
You know, that's what made me really great at what I did was I executed. Mm-hmm. But like it's progress now, not perfection. And I think that's been the biggest shift for me is that I don't need to be perfect.
So that's the motto you live by currently is like progress, not perfection.
Yeah, I think that's one of them. And like, I think the biggest thing for me right now is unapologetically showing up. Like I just... Like it is, I am so critical of myself. Like we were talking off air, like I'm an introvert and I don't like being in the spotlight and I am on social media and I'm modeling lingerie and it is fucking so uncomfortable for me. And I have to get through that, you know, and I just have to unapologetically show up as me no matter what I look like and no matter how I feel about myself because it's not about me anymore. You know, it's about the impact that I create. And, you know, people think that I, you know, think I'm so full of myself or think that I'm like trying to show off, which is so ironic to me because you put out, you know, I have a paid media strategy now. And so people comment, you know, shit haters comment on stuff. And it's so funny to me because people think I'm, you know, trying to show off or I'm actually dying on the inside. I don't want to do this.
That is very ironic. But it's what you said. I mean, it's how you've lived your life now.
Yeah.
The thing that makes you throw up, that's what you need to be doing.
Yeah.
What would you tell women? Because a lot of this is, I mean, it's very empowering even to men here listening to this. And I mean that.
Thank you.
But what do you want to share with women specifically who are struggling in any walk of life?
I think women specifically should not dim their light. And I think a lot of women shrink to, you know, there's the dynamic of masculine and feminine energy and like you want to be supportive and be in your feminine. And I think a lot of women think that they have to be small in their feminine and the masculine should be dominant. And like you don't have to dim your light and be feminine. I think there's a gross misunderstanding in that space. And this is whole, you know, we didn't really touch a lot on energy, but that is something I cannot stress enough for women, like take up space and you don't have to be hard. You don't have to be dominating, but take up space and be as bright as you possibly can. And do not dim your light because of insecure men. And I'm not coming at any men in that.
Yeah. No. And I'm hearing that as a man and I agree with it 100%. You know, and even women in general, even if it's at work sometimes, right? I'll give a work scenario. I can come off as very dominant, which I am for the most part. But even dominant men do like having very strong females mm-hmm. in their circles.
Absolutely.
Whether that's in an intimate relationship or professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's definitely true. I really value what you do and what you bring to the table.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You've done a lot. And this is, I feel like it's still, I feel like this product here and this whole brand is just getting started.
Yeah,
you
I
know?
Do too.
Because you launched this, you launched this in 23, at the beginning of 23.
Yeah, really soft launched in January and like, I would say launched appropriately in March.
Wow.
So we're just March till now.
Yeah, it is. It's a short period of time, but you've done some wild things, to say the least. Yeah. Again, I want to thank you for your vulnerability with us. Where can everybody find you and your products?
Diamandia.com and Instagram or TikTok at Diamandia.
Very cool.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We got some very good value here today. I can't wait to listen back. I'm still trying to replay moments in my head. Excited to learn about this new product.
You're gonna be using it.
I'm going to be trying it. So guys, whether you've listened to one or 160 episodes, we just want to say thank you very much. You can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Like, subscribe, and share this episode. The word of mouth still is by far the thing that's going to propel this forward and is continuing to do that. So thank you guys for your support. As always, until next time, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
I got to try this gua sha right now. Is it like gua sha or what?
Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at Los News Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Los News. Shop the latest merch at losnewsshop.com.